Hi there, guys. This is Bio. I know I'm breaking with tradition a little bit here and not welcoming you with my usual flair, and that's because we've actually had a pretty sad situation happen in the time that it took us to get this show together. The podcast team and I felt was very important to highlight, just so that everybody could know about it and be able to think about it. One of our former members, his name was Kessler Jackson. He went by Bowie on the forums. He was one of the founding members of Nass Clan and trooped with them for many, many years. He was there at the original Dragon Con parades and everything that we did as a club starting out down Nass Clan. He was very important. He actually, unfortunately, lost his life in a car accident a few days ago. And it's been hitting the Nass Clan pretty hard, and all of his friends down there are very, very sad. So we wanted to make sure that everybody knew about that. Keep Kessler and his family in your thoughts and prayers. And if we could take a quick moment of silence before we get things going here, we very much appreciate it. Thanks.
Welcome to Keldabe Talk Radio, the online radio show funded and run by members of the Mandalorian Mercs Costume Club. We're a charity organization spanning the entire globe, attending charity events in Mandalorian armor we've built by hand. Here on the show, we'll discuss your favorite topics in Star Wars, from the Sith to the Jedi, from the Empire to the Republic. We'll cover it all and everything in between. If you enjoy our show, visit our website at www.mandalorianmercs.com. And now, from our studios across the world, your hosts.
And welcome back to another episode of Keldabe Talk Radio. I'm Biohazard, and sitting with me as usual is my co-host, Crow.
Hello, everybody.
And with us this week, we have Frost, come on, from our Talon clan in North Carolina.
Hey, everybody.
We also have Faxos from our Vetnade clan in Manitoba.
Hello.
Cora from our Tarantata clan in Washington State.
Hey, guys.
And Marilla Denla from Wampa clan in Maine.
Hello, everybody.
And with us special this week, we have Asen Raka, the Alorad of the Sandhawk clan from Australia, down under. Welcome there.
Hey guys, how are you?
Now, you don't really sound terribly Australian.
Well, we'll try and put a special voice on for you. How's that sound?
What do you want him to do, complain about stingrays and dingoes?
Hey, as many stereotypes as we can include, I think we should, because that just makes us worldly, right?
Oh, no, the dingo took my baby! Gerald, get the shotgun! How many
so
times
in all seriousness,
I told you to stop leaving that baby in that f***ing washing basket?
Well, no, now you have to use really strange Australian names for things, too, like Badongawo and things.
What, like the Great Sandy Desert?
So,
we got a big desert, lots of sand. Let's see what we're going to call it. Well, I think the Great Sandy Desert, maybe. Got a big rock out there. What we call that? The big rock.
That's out there. Get your own big rock.
So we're glad to have you with us this week, Asen. We have a great show for you guys today. We're going to be going over a lot of stuff, from some celebration news to Mercs news. So I think we should better go ahead and just get into it. What do you think? So I'm not sure if it was actually news as of last podcast or not, but if it wasn't, we didn't cover it. We've actually hit 600 members now. I believe we're actually on 605, somewhere right there, right about this time. So that's good news. Yes. We're growing.
That is
good news. So do you guys remember what number you were?
I
now, like 42. No,
you're not the answer to everything, Frost. I'm sorry.
Say I was shortly after we hit 500, so I think I'm like 512 somewhere around there.
Yeah.
I think
you and Ark are like the whole part.
We were separated by one person. It's like she got in, some random person from like Texas, and then me.
It's like you couldn't have those numbers right next to each other.
No.
Now, when did you join, Sean? What number do you remember you joined?
253.
53.
I was real close to getting 250, but no dice.
Yeah, I think I'm somewhere in like the mid 150s or something like that. 140.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there.
I think I'm number 42.
Well, it's not that important. It's not like a TK ID or anything. So.
I think just I just snuck in the top 200 of like 192, I think.
Yeah, wasn't Racing Falco 200, I think?
Something like that. I wish we had kept track of like who was what number at, you know, like the milestones. I mean, obviously we can go look
there
it up.
There is
again.
A list.
Yeah, there's a list somewhere, but we didn't keep track of them for the first like 150 people, like at all.
Yeah.
Well, before that point, there was the question of, are we even really a club?
In fact,
we got approved with like 8 people.
In fact, Noval Talon himself is number 161.
Well, no, that's wrong. That's the catalog number.
Yeah.
That's not your actual...
Well, no, but that's the only number that they really go off of after a certain point.
Well, they stopped because they didn't want people doing the pissing contests that a lot of the...
No.
A lot of the other major costuming clubs sometimes have going on with their numerical designations.
Well, what's happened is, the first beginning portion, they're not accurate to when they joined in terms of what number they got. But by the time you got up to...
You still get to pick.
No, because the 250th member has the catalog ID number 250, because I'm at 253, because I was a couple past it.
Oh, no, I thought you were talking about another costuming organization.
No.
Wait, sorry, I'm hung up there. There are other costuming organizations?
There are.
Sorry to break it to you, but there are.
It is hard to believe.
Why am I still here?
You know, that's a good question. Why am I?
I think it's because
here?
We keep giving you awards.
It's been like 7 years. Why am I still here?
Yeah.
Why are you wearing the same colors?
I'm not. I have a new set.
Ooh. Certain colors never go out of style.
Yep.
Yeah. Like purple. Roman.
Does purple
never
run
in style, so it can't go out of style.
Exactly. Well, I don't know. In the 70s, it was kind of in style there for a minute.
Well, I know.
In the 70s, everything was in style.
Yeah, I mean, you wear purple if you're not afraid to be like considered like Beetlejuice.
Or the Joker.
I mean, it's like, well, yeah, the Joker. I mean, it's like that.
Just because the Joker will murder your entire family.
Are you really pale? Because only pale people really wear purple. The Joker, Beetlejuice, kings of old. I mean, you know, it had purple on you, probably pale.
I'm not like an Irishman pale.
That's probably a bad time to bring up how much purple is in my wardrobe, huh?
Yeah, but Nikki, you're not pale at all.
I am pretty pale.
Not bad.
Anyway, moving on. In other news, general Star Wars news, there is a new game that has been announced. You may have seen it. It's called 1313, and Sean wanted to talk a little bit about that this week.
Well, you know, there's a little bit of news that's come out right at the beginning of June. There hasn't been too much since, but from what we have been told, it's a third-person shooter that's setting you up as a bounty hunter working within the inner depths of Coruscant. So unlike what some people were suspecting, that 1313 would relate to Boba Fett, and we might get a game where we're Boba Fett, and is in fact level 1313 on Coruscant in the darker, grittier section. And so it's actually going to be the first Star Wars game with a mature rating, which should prove quite interesting. As well, you know, it's going to be cover-based, and it will have real-time rendering, which is going to mean that you're not really going to be able to distinguish between cutscenes and the actual gameplay. So it should smoothly transition between the two, which will be quite interesting to see. I believe current speculation is that it won't be on the current generation consoles because they simply don't have the computing power. It might actually be a strictly PC game. I don't know. It depends on how the consoles do coming up. And the other thing is that it's the first time that Industrial Light and Magic, Lucasfilm Animation, Skywalker Sound, and LucasArts are all working full-time on a game project. So it has a lot of potential, and I'm definitely looking forward to it.
Now, the reason everybody thought it was going to be a Boba Fett game originally was because 1313 was his clone number, right?
That's the clone number he gave to a clone trooper in one of the... I believe it was a novel or a comic. I can't quite recall now off the top of my head.
Yeah,
but
it's really interesting. I mean, because this is as you said, the first mature
rated
work for the Star Wars universe. I mean, anything really. I mean, the highest the movies ever went was PG-13, which is not really that mature level. You usually think mature is like 17 or 18 and up.
Yeah.
Well, I always find it funny because there have been a lot of games where you can dismember people with a lightsaber. Mm-hmm. Granted, there's no blood,
yeah,
which keeps it below M.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But
which actually begs the question, how is it going to be M-rated? Because neither blasters nor lightsabers, except in one scene in A&H, draw blood.
Well,
and as such, like, I mean, theoretically, vibro knives can draw blood and all that jazz, but...
And slug throwers and stuff. Yeah,
and Star Wars has its own vernacular, too, so you won't be hearing them running around popping the F-word out every 5 seconds.
Exactly.
If they're going to use vulgarity, it's going to be Star Wars.
I mean, there are plenty of other ways to die. Like, you could fall into a fan or something. I mean, I understand that, but...
Yeah.
Or you could be knifing people.
Maybe it will be one of those the six-breasted women like you saw at Jabba's Palace just walking around.
Yeah, I mean, that honestly, that's probably what I think is more likely, is that it's going to have explicit themes. Kind of like
Grand Theft
Auto? Like Heavy Rain. No, like Heavy Rain, where it's a thematic movie. There isn't actually a lot of... Well, there isn't a huge amount of gore in that. But
it's... The situations...
Yeah, I mean, and they swear a lot in Heavy Rain, but the situations are also extremely adult, definitely not for, like, 12-year-olds.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we're possibly getting into things like death sticks, because that's drug use, technically.
Yeah.
And stuff like that, so it could be interesting, I think.
Some of the...
I think also, don't the themes, like, brutality, like, if a character goes up and just starts slamming another character's head against the wall, wouldn't that probably...
That would probably contribute as well, yeah. And,
yeah, so it may just be that it's, you know, very violent and has mild nudity and drug use.
The other thing, though, is with the bounty hunter character, you know, you're going to get a lot of different weapons that you wouldn't typically see. Like, you're going to have flamethrowers, rocket launchers, grenades. You're going to have a lot of explosives. And then, you know, depending on how detailed they want to go into the impact on the enemies that that has, that could probably also contribute as well.
That's true. Gibbs and flailing bodies and stuff probably put it up in the M rating, I would think.
Yeah, if you have people on fire, that tends to bump it up a bit.
Yeah. You've also got to consider the horror factor as well. I mean, you look at how deep they're going down into Coruscant, all the stories we ever sort of had access to. Well, you look at all the fiction and stories that were released about the Coruscanti underworld, and it was a pretty nasty place. You know, there was the monsters and the really nasties that are down there. So you might get some sort of horror factor coming into it. Not much, but, you know, more of like a jump, like, every now and again.
Sort of like a Doom 3
or a Dead Space feel.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, kind of something like that. You know, you might see some sort of troglodyte or monster jump out, or, you know, you might have to go and fight monsters or something like that.
Mm-hmm. So. What were the creatures that they had in the Old Republic?
Oh, crap.
Rackles.
Rackles.
No, well, not Rackles, that were on Coruscant, if you guys ever played the good side.
I can't remember what those things are. I know what you're talking about.
They had, like, exposed brains and stuff.
I never got that far. I didn't buy the game. I just played the beta. Yeah.
But yeah, at least in the Old Republic, when you get down into the deeper levels, there are creatures that are mutants and that have been living down there, just thriving in their own little underworld society. So that's definitely a possibility.
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts of different ways that you could theoretically have that. I think it's probably going to, because they've been playing up the bounty hunter aspect and you're a criminal aspect. So I suspect that it's more likely that you're going to end up with people beating each other into walls and stuff.
Yeah,
it's going to end up being more a brutality factor thing.
Wasn't it in the beginning of the bounty hunter game where he was in, like, the arena? What was the creature that he was playing? Gundark, was it? The beginning of the bounty hunter with Jango Fett.
Oh, the giant beetle thing?
Yeah, I can't remember what that was.
Right, actually, yeah.
But it didn't mean it was an arena, so obviously that could mean, like you just said, beating each other up in cage fighting, type of thing.
If you want to talk about horrific Star Wars stuff, I mean, stuff that they could include, there's a lot of horrific stuff in Star Wars that is just kind of, like, touched on, but is never explained.
Yeah, you could have somebody, like the Dark Jedi Sith person, literally just tearing someone apart with the Force.
Mm-hmm. Or you could have things like Dianogas that are... Yeah. Tearing people apart.
Some
or
other stuff created by Sith alchemy, too.
Yeah, and then, I mean, you have things like the Sarlacc, which might not be on Coruscant necessarily, but that's pretty gruesome. I mean, you know, rotting over 1,000 years while keeping you alive.
You don't actually even rot. You're being digested, so there's that added factor
alive.
Actually being eaten and preserved because it doesn't want to get hungry, and you're a very tasty snack.
Yeah.
And then huts apparently eat people alive too, so.
We'll definitely run into some of the nastier critters, given that Coruscant has over 5,000 levels, you know, the higher the number, it'd be closer to the top. So 1313 is pretty close to the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And
this is actually something that I've always wanted to see in a game is, you know, you hear all these stories about what it's like down there, but we've never actually seen anything about how deep it goes. Like, that's always, as far as the fiction thing goes, that's always something that I've always wanted to see in a visual representation.
I forget where it was. It may have been the Old Republic, but I remember reading something recently where it said that the entire planet actually had levels in it. Mm-hmm. Which I think seemed a little far-fetched, but...
No, it's called an Ecumenopolis. It's a planet cover, a city-covered planet.
Yeah, so, yeah, there's places like Nar Shaddaa is supposed to be like that, too, of course, obviously. And I think there's a couple others.
Yeah, I think like the premise is like once they started building stuff on the outside, they started mining down and creating stuff, and eventually the whole planet is just like...
Oh, you think that they hollowed it out?
Well, that was what was said. I don't know if that was canon.
Well, that's inaccurate because they have landforms on, like, they have mountains and stuff that you can actually see under buildings and stuff. So there are certain buildings that don't go down all the way because there's a mountain in the way.
Okay, well, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Then lots of if you look at, they have maps of Coruscant and they talk about different locations on Coruscant in a number of the RPG material, but then also in other sources. And lots of the regions are actually named after former geographic elements. Like, for example, there's a place that's called, like, the Lake District, and it's just a bunch of buildings because it's Coruscant. But there used to be a lake there at one point.
Yeah. It makes it very uppity. It's a nice little gated community.
Exactly.
I mean, and I think this is a good chance to see some stuff about Coruscant that we haven't seen so far. Because, it's like the themes explored in Tor and in KOTOR. You know, once you go the further down you get, the weirder stuff gets.
I'm definitely looking forward to the initial cinematic of the descent when you start at the actual top of Coruscant that you're familiar with and just seeing how far down you go.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be probably pretty dramatic in the gameplay.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And another cool thing to note, though, is that it's LucasArts is going to be using full performance capture. So it's going to be the voice acting as well as motion capture and recording the detailed facial expressions, which will actually let the actors playing the characters express themselves naturally using both the script and their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so like, it'll kind of bridge the
gap. It's like L.A. Noir, right?
That's actually how they made the movie Rango, because Lucasfilm was actually or ILM was behind that. And they just stuck Johnny Depp in a room with some props and the other actors and said go.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up with a pretty
select
movie.
Yeah.
I imagine there was a script.
So there you go. Rango is a prequel to 1313.
Basically, yes. If you want to understand 1313, go watch Rango.
Go watch Rango.
And Django.
Very similar.
Man, that was a pretty movie, though, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I
well, as soon as you're done watching Rango, you then have to watch Django. And then once you're done with Django, then you can play 1313.
Yeah, you'll be awesome.
But only if you are also playing Bounty Hunter at the same time with your left hand on the GameCube.
This is getting really complicated, I think.
But the experience will be that much better for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going to go to a quick commercial real quick, and when we come back, we'll be interviewing Asen a little bit about his experiences in Australia and how his whole clan got started down there.
Hello, what have we here? You look absolutely beautiful. Welcome, I'm Lando Calrissian. I'm the administrator of this facility. And who might you be?
Who's the black private dick that's a sex machine to all the chicks?
Damn right.
Could you join us for a little refreshment?
Don't worry, my friend's down there.
Who is a man that would risk his neck for his brother, man? Can you dig it? The cat that won't cop out when there's danger all about.
Accelerate to attack speed. Draw their fire away from the cruiser.
You see, this cat chef is a bad mother. What I'm talking about, chef?
Yeah?
He's a complicated man, but no one understands him but his woman.
Don Jack.
And welcome back. So, Aeson, we have you with us today, a very special episode. So, Aeson, when did you join the Mercs?
Wow, that's probably nearly 6 years ago now. I hooked up with the Mercs right when they were sort of advertising on the dented helmet boards, which would have been late 2006, I think, right when it first sort of started. I can still remember the gentle ribbing we got because of the whole custom Mandos, not so great. But it was a long time ago now. 2006, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I think you had been with the 501st previously, right?
I had, yeah. I've done a couple of different sort of costumes over the years. I did an unofficial Anakin, which there's photos sort of floating around there. But the 501st membership was with a Commander Bly, which came from a US member. And that was good, actually. That was a good piece of gear.
Yeah, I remember watching your build on the dented helmet back in the day, and I think you had, if I'm remembering you correctly, if it's actually you that I'm remembering, you were basing your first armor set off of the guy from Gundam Wing, I believe, right? Trays?
No, that was actually something that Koza, one of the members, suggested looked like. I didn't really sort of follow the Gundam thing, but the thing that really piqued my interest in the design was I saw a bunch of customs running around. I thought, okay, well, I want to try and do my own thing now. And I remember that was round about when the Knights of the Old Republic comic series came out. And there was this two-page spread of, I think it was Mandalore the Ultimate, with the big fan blade. And he had his honor guard standing on the bridge of this destroyer, and they're all gold. And I just thought, that looks fantastic. I sort of started playing around with it. I thought, well, I didn't really want to be whole gold, but, just played around with ideas and bits and pieces in my head and came up with the version one, with the black and the gold sort of mix. But I guess right from the start, I wanted a different sort of helmet. And I was very, very lucky to get in on Hanschwab's aluminium cast helmets. So my gear's completely metal from the head down, apart from sort of the leather and the bits and pieces. All the actual armor pieces are metal. Mm-hmm. And, the helmet weighs a bit. So that's always interesting when you give it to people. They sort of drop it almost.
Yeah, you've got to be well, hopefully they don't drop it all the time.
No, it's survived a fall onto someone's foot, I think, and the foot was a bit more damaged than the helmet was, so that's okay. I'm okay with that.
So you're Orab Akkad now, and you've been instrumental, as I understand it, in building the Sandhawk clan up. You started out, and you were the first member in Australia, right?
I was, yeah. For a number of years, actually, I was sort of running around by myself, like a headless chook, trying to get any sort of interest in any sort of mercs coming along. And there was a couple of Jangos and Bobas running around, but there was still a lot of, I mean, you guys remember your history, there was still a little bit of animosity as far as sort of the purists versus customs go. And I was seen as a bit of a stay away from that sort of guy as a custom. So there wasn't really much interest. And I was almost about to give it up. And that's when Rav Stace came along, April, and she was at a convention with her nephew, and he was dressed as one of Quinlan Voss's little Jedi characters, and he loved my gear, absolutely loved it, thought it was fantastic, and I had to go away for work for a while at that point. Was gone probably 3 or 4 months, and by the time I got internet connection back, there was 3 or 4 of them running around. It turns out that he loved my gear so much that he wanted to be a Mando. So that prompted April to start getting into the Mando stuff. And, I get back from my little work rendezvous and there's heaps of them running around. I thought, this is fantastic. I've got, other Mandos to go to cons with. And it was the three of us. And then there was another couple in Brisbane, which is to the north of Australia. And pretty soon after that, Point, who you would all probably know and listeners out there, Point of Origin, he and a friend started up on the west coast of Australia, and then that was it. It really sort of took off there, and that was quite humbling, actually, to sort of have this whole
rise of members come up, and you know, my thanks really goes out to April there, because she's done a lot for the clan and just actually keeping it going while I wasn't there. Mm-hmm. So that was really good. Actually, from there we've really sprouted like a weed, I guess is the expression we use there. There's a lot of us running around now.
Yeah, it's interesting because Australia is, I think, as most of us know from third grade, an entire continent.
What?
It's really big.
Yeah, it's a big place, and there's lots of rocks, and there's lots of sand everywhere.
I was about to say,
everything
to
wants
fair,
to kill you, as I've heard.
Yeah, to be fair, there's only like a 20-mile habitable zone around the coast.
Pretty much, you know, you step either side of that, and you just burn into this crispy little bit of bacon, or a shark eats your face or something. You know, it's not a nice... There is a reason that the you know, the kingdom dropped off all their scum and villainy here. It's, but you know,
it's like Ryloth.
It's Mos Eisley.
Yeah,
it's like Ryloth. You have to live in that little twilight band between instantaneous frying death and instantaneous box jellyfish death.
There's one of my favorite comedians is an Irishman called Dylan Moran. You'd know him from Black Books, which is a BBC comedy. And he's of the opinion that everything here hates us. Mm. You know, he has no idea why we persist to live in this country where you crackle in the heat as you walk around, you fling yourself into the sea, which is entirely populated by things that hate you and want to kill you. You know, we're between a rock and a hard place there.
Mm-hmm. But, so, I mean, it's interesting because you were saying that you had members on the West Coast and on the North and the East Coast. How many times do you guys get together a year? I mean, I imagine it's a pretty big expense to meet up.
Well, with Australia, most of the life in the country is on the East Coast. So you've got Brisbane and Sydney and Melbourne and all these places. So a lot of us sort of – there's a couple scattered between each city, so we all do our own thing, but – there's a huge convention, Armageddon, down here, and that's really sort of our national meetup. It's in Melbourne, if you all want to sort of look that up in your spare time. And we'll last meetup there, I think we got 13 or 14 of us together, even 15. Mm. So, nice. You know, that's sort of our coup de grace type.
Mm-hmm. I think I was talking to Mike, I think Point of Origin, and he was saying it's something like a 5-hour flight to get out there.
Yeah, it's for him to get over here, it's about 5 hours, but between sort of the other East Coast cities, maybe 2 hours at most, which is good for us. You know, it's an easy place for us to get to.
Yeah, most of us aren't used to traveling that much. I mean, here up in Wampanoag, we drive maybe 150 miles to go to something.
Yeah, like round trip for us to for Bio and I up here in mid Maine to get down to where Maria lives. It's about like maybe 3 hours, and that's usually as far as we ever have to go.
Yeah, and that's driving at like highway speed, you know, 70 miles an hour.
Yeah, it's like straight down.
I don't know what that is in kilometers.
Crazy Yankees in your imperial system. It's about 130
Ks.
KPH. You know? That's okay. I understand what you're saying.
For God's sake, join the rest of the world.
It's called the imperial system.
I can do math.
Why would we change that?
I'm isolationist on purpose. to give you an idea of scale, I mean, it is, as our third grade subject matter expert has pointed out, it's a very big country, and you're sort of looking at about 1,000 to 1,200 kilometers, which is about 500-600 miles between each major city on the East Coast, and then to get to where Point is from where I am, you're probably looking at about 4,000 Ks. So it's a big trip.
It's about the size of the U.S., if not bigger.
Yeah,
about half
you
the size
probably,
of Texas.
Yeah.
You'd be crossing a good couple of states at least. So, you know,
next time you complain about having to go to a con that's far away, think about how far these guys have to travel.
Yeah. Think of my angry face in a car for 12 hours.
and then when the people in Vok Chi and Europe start complaining about, oh, it is too far away for me to go to this con, you just look at them and you glower. Because you can get from France to Poland in 800 miles.
Yeah. So. Yeah. My family, they went to England one time, and they were in London, and they said they were going to be driving to Edinburgh. And the innkeeper at the time, she was like, you're driving that in one day? It's like 4 hours. And it's like, heaven, yes, heaven, it's 4 hours of my day. I can be there before lunch.
We drive that far to go get lunch. What are you talking about?
Yeah. Because we're that backwards, we have to get that far.
So what's the crowd like in Australia? Is there a lot of a big geek community, a nerd community that likes to come out and go to conventions like that, or is it kind of Spartan?
It's emerging. That's one thing that, you know, Mike Point and I have a lot of deliberations about, is that we're very jealous of what happens in America with your cons. You know, you get tens of thousands of people there, and there's always something going on, but you know, ours have sort of maybe got an entire weekend's worth of people in one of our conventions would be one of your days, maybe a half day's sort of turnout. So it is emerging. It's not as prevalent as over there, but there's a good couple of year. It is getting bigger. I'm not sure when that sort of started happening, but you sort of get all these little splinter things coming out. We've even got Comic-Con coming out here. That's this weekend, actually. So the Australian version of Comic-Con starting up, which will be interesting. And we've got a couple of members going to that. But it's good to actually see it start to develop a little bit. There was nothing like this when I was a kid, which is, you know, not too long ago, but I still am an old man. So
you guys didn't have Star Trek conventions back in the 70s?
And we didn't have televisions. to give you an idea of the Star Trek conventions here, you are probably looking at a group of maybe 20 to 30 people booking out a convention hall type thing of in a hotel somewhere. It's not there are no sort of dedicated Trek cons that are huge in the way that yours are. That, you know, you get a good couple hundred people coming to them, but we've got things called Supernova, Armageddon. They're sort of everything, anime, fantasy, sci-fi. Because if you start, you know, doing fantasy only or sci-fi only cons, you really start to close down a lot of the people that would go to those cons. So they just sort of, to actually get attendance, they lump everything together. So you'll have everything under the one roof. Which is good, you know.
Why do you think that there's, like you said, that we have a lot of conventions and everything over here in the States? Do you think it's a cultural difference between those two areas?
I wouldn't say it's a cultural difference, more as a population difference. I mean, you know, we've got 23 million people here. That's what, one of your states, I think, almost. So.
I think Maine, we have like 1 million.
That is the state of New York.
Of course, we're one of the least populous states.
We're in the middle of friggin' nowhere.
Yeah.
that's something to really sort of take into account on con membership and costumers in general. You know, we have a large amount for our population, but you know, when you start comparing it to the European stuff and the American stuff, especially, that just blows my mind that, you know, there are so many of you guys able to be in one place at one time. We just can't number that sort of thing. There's just not enough people here. But we certainly try and make an impact whenever we go somewhere, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm.
See, I think it's just because we have to spend less time fighting off snakes.
Well, we have more time for recreation. Yeah.
The snakes get pretty nasty here.
Honestly, if there's a zombie apocalypse, I'm going to Australia because it cannot possibly be more dangerous than all the other crap you have to deal with. Plus, all that's picking off the zombies for you.
You guys almost had a zombie apocalypse a couple of months ago, if I'm reading the news correctly. What's with biting the face?
That was
and our Centers for Disease Control keep on apparently leaking air out of the building, which is like that's a winner.
Yeah.
You know you're in trouble when the CDC actually has to release an official statement saying, guys, seriously, go home. There's no zombies here.
We had a zombie day up here in Maine a couple of days ago. They had a bunch of medical professionals come together at a convention center, and they had like a mock infection go around. And it was like them preparing for a a pandemic scenario, but they use zombies as the theme.
Anthrax is boring. Let's go with zombies.
Yeah.
Worst timing.
This is why I'm nice and comfortable up in Canada.
Yeah.
Disease freezes at, you know, 0 degrees, so he's fine.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he's fine. He's set.
So you guys are planning on, or at least some of you are coming over to the States for Celebration 6, right?
Yeah, I'm actually a little bit disappointed by that. Work pulled the plug on that idea for me. I had to move recently, and I was originally coming over, but I think there's still about 4 or 5 of our members heading over. So some of them are also staying for Dragon Con, which is very shortly afterwards. But
I guess if you're going to fly halfway around the globe, you might as well try to make both.
Yeah, exactly.
It's in the neighborhood at that point.
Yeah, anything is in the neighborhood after a 15,000K flight.
Yeah, 22 hours on the plane. I'm not getting back on for at least 2 weeks.
Yeah,
I'm not even going to like flying down to Florida.
Yeah, for us, it's like a 3-hour flight.
Yeah,
don't want to do it.
I'm driving.
Of course, here in the U.S. at least, you know, you have to sit at the airport for 5 hours before the plane takes off.
Yeah, just make sure you put your skirt on before you chuck a little tantrum in the middle of the airport for me, okay? We've got to make it really authentic.
I don't wanna.
You joke, but I'm not wearing pants on the plane.
This aircraft is now a pants-free zone. Anyone offended, please just look away.
how many total members does Sandhawk Land have right now?
Ooh, actually, that's a very good question. Official members, I'll just check for you.
Because you're certainly one of the fastest growing clans.
Yeah, we've really gone to the skids as far as members go. I'll just get the list for you 1 second.
Gone to the skids.
I do like that.
there's going to be a lot of
fun to hear slang from other languages.
We got to get
Australian is clearly not English.
Yeah, we got to get a Scottish guy on here at some point.
Oh, yeah.
And you guys also have
currently, from what I'm seeing, we've got 12, 13 official members.
That's more than us.
Yeah,
so but you know we've got anywhere between 5 and 10 members actively working on gear, and I believe this weekend there's a couple of official sort of application photos being taken for about 3 members. So we're picking up speed, that's for sure. It's good.
Yeah, to put it in perspective, we like a third of our clan is on this podcast every month.
Yeah. So I have one final question for you.
Yeah, of course.
Does anybody in your clan play a didgeridoo, and will they bring it to C6?
No, you'd probably get shot for bringing something like that there, but no.
I don't know. They were playing vuvuzelas all over the world there for a couple months.
Yeah, but that's
this is a didgeridoo free zone.
We're not talking about a 6-foot blood out log.
They're actually a very, very difficult, instrument to play. Very difficult. They're, you know, just sort of getting the vibrations right and everything like that. It takes a fair while to start up.
Yeah, I was trying to convince Arden to let me buy one at some point, but then I realized I have a T21, so I could just kind of take the barrel off and use that. So we'll take another commercial break real quick, and we'll come back, and we got some more Mercs news and some other special stuff lined up for you. So stay tuned.
Hey, Bounty Hunter Steve.
Hey, Bounty Hunter Ted.
I shot a guy the other day.
Yeah.
Shot him right in the leg.
Uh-huh.
It was great.
Yeah, I know.
First time shot a guy in weeks.
Yeah, I know.
You don't seem terribly thrilled about it.
Because you shot me, you nerf brain. You should get one of those new Arrogate Industry targeting arrays for your rifle, man.
Yeah, maybe I should get on that.
Really should look into that.
Arrogate Industries targeting arrays. A sound investment in not shooting your compatriots.
Sweet.
And welcome back. So we're actually going to talk a little bit now about the Essential Guide to Warfare, and Asen is kind enough to crack open the book and talk a little bit about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, look.
On the spot now.
Sorry?
Where's the button? I can't hear anything. This isn't my house.
Okay, no. But all seriousness, we'll put the serious book face on. Okay, so Lucas...
LucasArts and a nice man called Jason Fry have provided us with the Star Wars Essential Guide to Warfare. And essentially what it is about a 240-page book of it's chronicling everything really from the word go in the history of Star Wars right up until sort of the legacy comics. It goes through troop movements. It goes through different types of weapons. It explains shields, history. There's a lot of stuff in here that casual fans would probably not be aware of but might sort of like to look into. Stuff like Han and Baron Fell went through the same class at the Academy. Mm-hmm. There was at one point in Star Wars history what I can only describe as a religious oppressive government that was overthrown by the Jedi. So there was all, if you're a fan of Warhammer 40K, there was cathedral spaceships that, you know, went on this religious crazy conversion type thing.
Is this just Star Wars trying to be like, and we're actually all sci-fi?
It's a very unique book in how it goes about things. It sort of goes right from the word go with the Rakatan and the Killix and all that, and then just sort of keeps going through, but it pulls apart everything. All the fans out there that are listening to this of the old Dark Horse Old Republic comics.
Oh yeah.
There's a lot of designs of races you hear about, so the TNEs and all these huge conflicts that you really didn't ever have any exposure to, but this huge the mainstay of Star Wars lore, they're all sort of broken down. You get ship designs. It's really a very good book for anyone that sort of writes fan fiction or just wants a better understanding of how everything clicks together, because there's very, very detailed breakdowns of everything. It goes into ship mm-hmm. classes. It goes into, everything.
This is like something they covered in Star Trek. They had like this theory that all the planets were seeded with the similar genetic material, and that's why everybody kind of looks like humans.
Yeah, it does touch on that. There's sort of an overbranching race that built Centerpoint Station called the Celestials. And a couple of the really old school races that sort of aren't around anymore had a bit of dealings with them. For the Mando fans out there, being that it's a Mando podcast, it actually has a complete copy of the Da Wada Wada verse in there. So there's a huge chunk that just didn't exist before that. It goes on about the Tongs and the Battalion Zazelle and stuff like that. It's really first class. The artwork that comes with this is worth the price of the book alone. There's a lot of new stuff in here that's just amazing. Mm-hmm. Some really, really high class stuff. It's probably the definitive Star Wars guide that I've come across as far as quality goes. Mm-hmm. The structure is excellent. A lot of the
old sounds like it's almost the essential guide to the essential guides.
Yeah, it's a lot of. I mean, being critical here, a lot of the other guides tended to have these gaps in them that they just bits and pieces were missing, or you'd have a bit of quality there and maybe not as much quality over here. But this book is whoever actually put this together did an amazing job. Everything is coherent, so you don't sort of jump from this time to 3,000 years later. It's all very structured. The maps are very, very detailed. I've been a big Star Wars fan forever, and I think for me, sort of someone that loves getting every trinket of information out there, it's really refreshing to actually open a book and find new information on something that you thought you knew everything about, and then you sort of read through and go, oh great, well this is here now. Even simple stuff like a complete breakdown of who Rogue Squadron was. I mean, I had no idea what the pilots were or what their backgrounds were, but it's here, and it's fairly up to date. Actually, a lot of the new Clone Wars stuff's in here. It's really something incredible. Anyone that sort of collects these out there, I'd really recommend it. It's mm-hmm.
And just for our people in the U.S., you can get it on Amazon right now for about $44. They have them used and new from about $25 too. So,
well, yeah, looks like I gotta go buy a new book.
Yes.
Yeah, it looks really, really great.
Yeah, it's you could probably get it. It's a soft cover book, but it's about an A4 size, so it's fairly detailed.
Nice.
But yeah, I'd recommend it, guys. It's really something else. You know, you could approach it from a couple of different ways. If you wanted to write fan fiction stuff, there's detail in there. If you just want something to sit on your table for people to come over, it's one of those books. You know, there's something in there for everyone, definitely. Mm-hmm.
Excellent. So we'll actually move on a little bit now. We put up a little request on the Merc's Facebook a few minutes ago asking for suggestions about topics or questions for us. We'll go through and try to answer a few of them real quick. So, team, put your thinking caps on and let's answer some questions.
I'd like to start with this one. We've got one that was the best way to mount or put a mic/voice amp in your close quarters bucket. That's actually got a couple likes. I personally tried to put like speakers and my microphone and all that whole setup in my helmet. I think I just had some terrible, terrible speakers because it sounded terrible when I spoke. But I think the primary issue you're going to run into is feedback, having the speakers that close to the microphone. And I don't really think it's going to matter specifically what kind of helmet you have unless it's you've somehow managed to rig up a fully enclosed thing. I think it's just going to have to be a lot of soundproofing and proper venting of the speakers and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There is actually a fix to this one. Do you mind if I contribute to this?
No, go right ahead.
Who was asking this question? Is it one of our members?
It is Richard Lara.
Okay.
The second.
Richard, if you're listening to this... I don't know what the screen name is there, but there is work that I did on mine. My helmet audio interior's got a UHF radio in it, and it's actually got a voice amp in it. And one of the things you want to try and do is the feedback's going to come from what's been previously stated is the mic being too close to the inside of the speakers, but the fix for that, if you want all enclosed inside the helmet and there's no wires coming out or anything like that, cut up an ice cream bucket container. I don't know if there's any fancy US wording for this, but your plastic tubs that your ice cream comes in, cut that up. And what you want to do is actually trace around the speaker inside and you'll have the holes, for want of a better word, on the back of your speakers. So seal those to the inside of the helmet. And what you want to do is drill a small hole so that the center of the speaker goes over that hole so that it's the sound is actually projecting out. And then take the plastic and actually cover the holes of the speakers, and that actually eliminates 80 to 90% of your feedback that you're going to get because there's no sound actually coming out of the speakers into the bucket. It's all actually projecting outwards from that point. The next thing to really sort of eliminate any of that feedback is your little furry tips that go over the top of the microphone. That's what you want to put on one of those. And preferably if you can get away with it, if you're using a unidirectional mic, it's going to pick up some sort of noise from outside. You're going to have to deal with that. But if you do the ice cream plastic trick and put one of the fuzzy tips over the microphone, it'll actually stop almost all feedback from any sort of stuff inside the helmet. You'll be able to speak very clearly outside with that done.
I did use craft foam, just the stuff you can get at AC Moore, Michaels, Joann's, wherever. I did use that, but the problem that I found with that was the amount you need to use is kind of constrictive. Like that's a terrible echo.
Yeah.
Speaking of feedback...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's one of the things that this plastic actually eliminates is your need for a lot of space because, you know, unless you've got a pea brain head, you're going to run out of space in the inside of your helmet. So, yeah, give the plastic a go. Foam fixes almost everything except the inside of a helmet.
Right.
Yeah, and something to also keep in mind is that you don't need...
Where is that coming from?
I think it's Aeson's mic.
What have we done now?
we don't need what?
We're just getting a little echo from Aeson's mic.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. What was I saying?
We don't need something.
Oh, yeah. You don't actually need to have the volume on helmets all that loud. The best part about having that speaker system in there is just to add that little tinny effect to your voice to give you that, you know, like you're talking to a speaker kind of tone. Because if you have, especially if you have the bottom of the helmet open, which I think 99% of us do, unless you have one of those neck seal things. Helmet skirts. Unless you have one of those, you have a lot of sound coming out from under the helmet, and unless it's in like a really loud room, that plus even a small speaker sound will add that mechanical tone to it, so it sounds as if it's all being projected that way.
Right.
Yeah. So next question is, what were the podcast team's first troop experiences like? Asen, what was your first troop like? In Mando armor, I'll just say that.
It was 2007. And yeah, that was awkward. I think that with, you know, a few exceptions, every costumer is going to go through some sort of misery hell wearing their gear for the first time in public. I mean, it looks fantastic on paper. It looks even better in the mirror in your bathroom. And then you step out into a convention hall and those bazillions of people's body heat starts to melt all the glue on your gear and it all starts falling off. And I think my favorite experience was getting so excited about how fantastic I felt with these photos being taken of me, only to find that the flash was making my visor see-through. So all the stupid faces that I was making and these big, huge grins. You know, it's like ultimate derp is seeing this man die. You know, he's standing there looking all badass with his sword and his gun, and then this face looking out of the visor going, so,
what was your first troop like, Crow?
Mine, well...
Do we want to count SnowCon?
Well, that's the thing. I was not official at SnowCon, so I don't think I'll count that one. I also went to Anime Boston unofficial a couple times, too, with nowhere near an acceptable kit.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, I think Anime Boston 2010... I think was my first official one, which was also great because I think we had, it was 2011, never mind, mm-hmm. Which was great because we had, between Wampa and Firaxen and a couple folks who came up from Pennsylvania, we had like almost 15 mercs at this, you know, 15,000 person convention. So we had a pretty significant presence at the con. I thought it was great because, you know, I looked pretty good. There were a couple of, it was also a... Like Asen was saying, there was a lot of morale boost when you're standing and the conference security has to come and say, you guys and your photographers are blocking the hallway. You're going to need to move.
Well, they did it at every major con, though, so I don't feel bad. Sean, what was your first troop like?
My first troop was quite exciting, given that I had just basically finished the first version of Thaxos back in 2009. I kind of worked on it over the summer along with the current Alarad, because it was him and myself that basically founded the clan. And we managed to get six people, basically, all done with their Mandalorian armor in a matter of like 2-3 months. And we showed up at the convention, which is Central Canada Comic Con, which at the time wasn't too big. But you didn't really get any large groups of customers. So when we walked in there, we made quite the entrance. we took the elevator, and it was just all six of us in the elevator together. And the moment we stepped out, people just, their jaws dropped. And I think the best part of it was just the impact we had on that convention, because, you know, we'd get people just flocking to us, and, you know, as we marched around and just hung out, you know, people would just turn and stare. So it was a really interesting experience, just in the fact that, you know, for me, that was the first time I'd ever done any sort of costuming. So the fact that everyone was staring and wanting photos with me as if I'm some sort of, you know, celebrity of sorts, or, you know, kind of a big, you know, like I'm a big deal of some sort. You know, the fact that people would, you know, were so interested and wanting photos with me, it's a really unique experience that, you know, if you haven't had that happen to you before, it can kind of take you by surprise.
Mm-hmm. What was your first troop like, Muriel? I think I remember some stories about that.
You know what? If you bring that up. But, actually, mine was like, I started like early 2009. Like, it was like the first 3 days of the new year. And I wanted to go to a convention and meet up with, there's only two at the time, up in Bangor where they live now. And it was a convention that I wanted to go. So I pretty much, it was like 17 days of trying to put a costume together. And I managed it, I guess. Well, no, I wouldn't say I managed it. But I kind of put one together, and I got up there, and I was like, the worst thing you'll ever see. And I kind of like saw the two people that were there who had nice costumes, like nice Mandalorian costumes, and I was kind of demoralized at the same time. I was like, wow, I have the worst costume I've ever, like, hadn't seen much at the time, but I knew it was really bad. And so I pretty much, I mean, I left and I was like, well, I don't think costuming's for me, because it was like, it was bad, guys.
Mm-hmm.
But
I remember that you forgot to remove a logo.
Yes. You know what?
No, it's funny, and it helps people to know not to do that themselves.
I made my things out of Rubbermaid trash cans.
Oh,
I left the Rubbermaid on the back plate, and I made the trash can or the back plate out of it. Yeah,
I think Rubbermaid owes you some money.
Yeah, but I mean, I did after that. I kind of did get a little boost because Abby, who was one of the people up there, Ian's wife, kind of sent me a message afterwards, and it kind of motivated me a little bit. So I think my costume has gotten better over the years. But
oh, it's much better.
The first one, yeah, it was.
No, your kit is one of the best in the clan. So don't feel bad. Yeah.
At the time, it was
fine.
I will tell first you that one, I personally think you have the best macros that I've ever seen.
Thank you.
So, Cora, what was your first experience like?
Mine was Dragon Con 2008, I think. Yeah, it sounds right.
I remember that.
I literally got approved like a day or two before the event, and I was making some changes that very night, like before I drove down. So day before the parade, Alicia was in the room helping me hot glue stuff together. And when we were walking around one night, some drunk lady pushed my spotter out of the way and grabbed me and hauled me over for a picture, and that was kind of awkward. But that was probably the most interesting thing that happened to me then.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of felt bad. I ended up de-kitting because I didn't realize at the time my boots were going to cause problems with my feet. And after the parade, I had to de-kit. And when I got back, everybody was like, you should have been here. There were kids going, we want a picture with the Mando. Which one? The purple one. And I'm like, crap.
And I got screwed because I had to get pictures with me.
And a big Deathclaw. What was your first troop like, Frost?
Oh, God. Okay, so way back in yonder days of yore, back when Titans roamed the Earth, for the record, that's like 2004, was the first time I ran the Frost kit. And let me give you a little context. A little bit like Muriel, I created my first set of Mando armor in about, I'd say, 6 days.
That's not a good sign.
It took about 6 days, and I watched Master and Commander the entire time, and I worked about 8 hours a day.
So what, you saw it like twice, right? Because that's a really long movie.
It's a really long movie.
Naval Pal will help me build my costume.
Exactly. Russell Crowe, give me that hammer.
In the name of Crowe.
It was all made out of trash can plastic and everything, and it was all just painted flat purple. It's actually still the same purple I use today. But actually, a number of original components are still on the costume. But it was horrifying. I had come up with this special custom-designed way to attach the shins because I wasn't using shin guards originally, and that was a terrible decision. That didn't work at all. I ended up finding a potted plant that was sort of out of the way, and as armor pieces fell off, I would stash them in the back of the potted plant. And nobody stole them or anything. It was pretty awesome.
Well, they were just like, that stuff's in that plant for a reason.
Well, it was hard to see, and if anybody found it, they were probably like,
The Mando is shedding his skin to become a bigger Mando. We're all in trouble now.
Yeah, some poor angry janitor was just like watching you from a distance. Like, he better pick those up.
But it was at an anime convention too, so I was actually getting a lot of flack from wearing a sci-fi costume at an anime convention. There was one other lonely-looking scout trooper there.
That's a good thing. I haven't noticed that happen too much recently.
It stopped happening around 2007 is what
I happens
noticed.
Every now and then at up here in the Northeast. Anime Boston's probably the most all-anime, all-the-time convention. Every once in a while, you'll get it from attendees. They'll be like, yeah, we need to stuff like that. But then they realize there's 12 of us, and they don't really talk terribly loud.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes you get people giving you sideways glances. Normally, those people are not in costume, or their costume is really terrible. Like, yeah, it's something really, really simple, like L from Death Note. Like, anybody can wear a black wig and walk around with a stupid...
Displeasure!
Yeah, at our panel that we had this last weekend at PortCon, I admittedly shouldn't have done this, but I started off the panel with, you know, we realized you guys are, you know, mostly... professional costumers, but we don't make things out of duct tape here. And I felt so bad.
There's a duct tape master chief.
It was really good. I didn't even notice it until, you know, people started like turning around and looking at him. And I was just like, you know, I'm sorry.
Manager, please change the name of this panel to Soul Crushing and Paxos.
I was about to say, the Master Chief guy, just let's do his mental discourse here for a minute. He's coming in, he's walking in the room, he's like, I'm really excited for this. This is like a prop building thing, and there's sci-fi customers. Yeah, this is going to be awesome, man. I'm going to learn so much new stuff. He sits down. Oh, man, I need to find a seat. Hold on, I need to have a really good view. There's a guy getting up. He's going to start talking right now. Oh, what's he saying? And I hate your costume.
From a guy who, at the time, because you'd been wearing it all morning, so you took yours off. He's not even in costume. He's just standing there in a shirt and jeans.
Yeah, no, it was just a plaid overshirt and some shorts. And I was just kind of leaning back and against him, like, yeah, we don't make our stuff out of duct tape. Oh,
we don't serve your kind here. Your duct tape will have to wait outside.
A single, solitary tier.
Well, he would have been just like a black like bodysuit at that point. That'd be kind of weird. He was really tall and skinny.
A single, solitary tier.
Yeah. I found what Frost said interesting, that he's actually still got a couple elements of his costume still intact from his very first beginning. I was just wondering if anyone else did, because I know I personally have replaced just about everything on mine.
Piece of mine that's still intact and with me is my helmet. Even though it's been cut up and repainted once, it still looks fairly similar to how it used to.
My shoulder pads are the same. They're actually, part of it's a sort of look thing. My wife and I, Ark, we both got in at pretty much the same time, and she has, like, her kit's mostly a brown color, so I have one brown shoulder pad, and then my shoulder pad, and she just, you know, took one of mine, too.
Mm-hmm.
So as we both kind of upgraded over the years, those have kind of stuck. It's adorable.
Oh, yo, you know what?
Are you going to let her paint pony stuff on it?
My original part's current.
See, we can't do crossovers, so I can't do that.
Wow. we had another question from the Facebook.
I don't think we'd covered everyone's leftover armor bits yet.
No, we are completely skipping your question with just mine and Ian's.
Yep.
Frost, what's actually left from yours?
I still have my flight suit, my original knee pads, because I actually wear lots of... There's this thing where people say you can't use sports armor, and that's true. If the sports armor is what's visible, you shouldn't be using it. However, sports armor was designed by a bunch of Germans to stick to your body. And if it wasn't designed by the Germans, it was designed by the Japanese, who are almost as good. At which point, you just mount whatever it is on the sports knee pad, and it will stay forever. So I have the original knee pads, my original gunner boots, and the original flight suit, actually. So
you've washed it, I take it.
Breeze does not count.
I wash mine after every trip.
I mean, it rains periodically at Dragon Con.
Yeah, I had an interesting thought while you were mentioning the whole Japanese connection to that, and I was thinking Fushigi Mando.
No.
It's like a crossover second year kid of like Jared from The Labyrinth, but he's a Mandalorian and he's just like spinning glass balls all the time. That's his weapon. Anyway, moving on.
What's left on Muriel's kit from the original?
Pretty much.
Is that Rubbermaid logo still on there?
Yeah, that's still there. No, pretty much just my flight suit.
Ah, okay.
That's it.
What about you, Cor? Anything left over from yours?
Actually, on my current kit, the green one, the collar plate and the back plate were my original collar and back plate. And on the early Crusader chest plate I'm working on, my original ab plate is getting incorporated into that as part of cut down drastically. But I think those are the only original pieces I currently use. My original helmet was painted up as the modern Beastmaster one, and it's a display piece only now. I don't actually wear it. So,
what about you, Asen? Anything left over on your kit?
Well, the helmet is essentially some sort of mithril adamantium mix, so it's indestructible. The way that Point joked about weathering it is actually true. I sit it in the backyard and throw rocks at it to weather it. So it's not going anywhere anytime soon.
Best way to weather metal armor.
Yeah. I've got the helmet, the karma, which you've probably seen in some of the pics, and the shins. Everything else has sort of evolved naturally over the last couple of years as I've found bits and pieces that fit better and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. So the last question from Facebook that we'll do is, this is from a guy named Rude. And he asks, what kind of tips would you offer to unofficial members that live in the state without clan representation?
Aoud.
Sorry. Move.
I'd say the Freelancers Guild.
Yeah.
Even though technically, there might not be anyone near you, that is the whole point of the Freelancers Guild, to give you some representation and to give you some help while you're trying to become official.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the support system that a clan provides is really important, but it doesn't necessarily need to be that close. Like, you don't actually have to be physically in proximity of that person. Because, even like in Wampa Clan, we're separated by hundreds of miles, and so we primarily communicate through the forum anyway.
Right.
Except for you and me, because we live 10 miles away.
Yeah.
Well, and the other thing is that if you're trying to get help with making stuff, the one thing you can always do is screw up.
Yeah.
Like, the thing that I've always done is I almost always try to do something myself first. I screw it up royally. But in doing so, I then learn some things about how to do it better. And then I take... Huh? Hit me.
What?
Somebody was asking a
question. I don't think anyone said anything.
Oh. But, edit.
Nope, that's staying in there.
But, you just have to give it a go, essentially. And if you screw it up, then you screwed it up. And oftentimes you can salvage whatever you screwed up. And if you can't, then you start over again. And you just have to keep at it, and eventually you'll learn how to do it. And I know dozens of people on the Mercs who have learned how to make metal armor themselves or how to cast themselves exclusively by the trial and error method.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I know some people that learn not to, use Bondo with their hands that way.
Hey, I still haven't gotten cancer, so I'm still all right.
Give it about 50 years, we'll see.
I mean, hand just granted, I do have a giant scar now.
Yeah, I remember I was the second collar plate I made. I was trying to reshape it, and it was a pretty thick. It was like a 3 or 4 millimeter sinter at the time, and I was sort of heating it and sort of, but I was screwing up the whole way, and I ended up just snapping the damn thing right in half. And I ended up learning how to properly use fiberglass that same weekend, putting the whole thing back together, and that actually ended up pretty good because I was able to weather it and give it a nice thickness to it that really worked for that incarnation of my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
For me, I would say that since we didn't have the Freelancers Guild back in the day when I started up, back in my day, the best thing you can do is definitely to read on the forums and look at what other people have done to get a sense of how it's done. And then just the other thing to do is, try and find some other like-minded friends or people through Comic-Con that do other costumes, if you can. And, just work together on it, motivate each other. I mean, it was myself and our, you know, the current Allered. He and myself were the only two that had really, you know, shown interest in it. He had already gotten started, and I was, you know, looking into getting started. So he was able to lend me a bit of hand with, lend me some help with that. And he had done other costumes before. Mm-hmm. And other than that, I mean, it's just a matter of self-motivation and be willing to try. And, you know, as Eric said, sometimes you mess up and sometimes it works out.
Yeah.
You just got to try.
Just use the forum, really. I mean, that's what the forum is there for. And
yeah.
I think most of us, 99% of the stuff we learned, we did on the forum.
Yep.
I mean, you can learn a lot in person, but it's not where it's all at. I mean, if you can just read and then apply the techniques that people are teaching or just on display as they're doing their own kits, I think you'll learn quite a bit and you can start, as Frost said, do the trial and error process.
Look, specifically, don't ignore all sections of the boards. I think that along with the search function, and everyone listening to this, please, for the love that all is holy, use the search function on a forum. Your next stop after using a search function should always be the tutorials. There is some goldmine stuff in there. You know, some of these people, Noval, Tag, all these people that have put time and effort into the tutorials, it's to help you guys, the new people, actually sort of stand on your own two feet. And I echo what Frost says, you're going to stuff up. In fact, I insist on it because it's the only way you're going to learn. You can't do everything properly the first time, but don't ignore those tutorials. There's some amazing stuff in there. You'll be selling yourself short if you do skip that part of the board and try and go head first into it all.
Definitely. So we'll do one final commercial and we'll be back, and we got last little bit of news for you guys. Stay tuned.
Sometimes life just throws you a curve.
Yes, Greedo. As a matter of fact, I was just going to see your boss. Tell Jabba that I've got his money. So, Vitaly.
Blastech knows that your equipment needs to be as ready as you are.
Yes, I bet you have.
Sorry about the mess.
Blastech, for whenever you shoot.
And welcome back. Those commercials are always great, aren't they?
Well, I think they're fantastic. I made all of them.
Well, I think you're a little bit biased. But. Anyway, moving on. We have a census going on right now in the Mercs. All the Grandfather Clause stuff has gone through, and Frost is going to explain that really briefly. And then we'll go on and talk about LWI a little bit.
Alrighty. Well, fortunately, you guys kind of lucked out in that you actually have two regional commanders on your podcast. Say hi.
Hey.
Hi, regional commander.
Oh, yeah. And you have you're a regional commander, too?
No, he's not.
Your face is a regional commander.
Hey-o!
Burn!
So, we lucked out. We have two real and one faux regional commander on the podcast with you today. And basically what ended up happening is there were changes in the Grandfather Clause policy, which have made it so that the Grandfather Clause isn't. And as such, we need to go around and figure out who is in compliance with the current set of rules and who are not. And we're using that as an excuse to do a census of the club.
Don't panic.
Yeah, don't panic, because even if you're not in compliance right now, you're going to have an undetermined period of time to finish your kit and get it back up to snuff before you are put on inactive status.
Mm-hmm. And this is all just an effort to just make sure that everybody's on the same page starting now, essentially, right?
Yeah, we just want to make sure that everybody's got costumes that are within the rules. Mm-hmm.
The deadline's for the Ruzalor to report back. It's not for you guys to make the changes. And I've seen a couple of people that start panicking going, oh, crap, I need to make all these changes by this time? That's not enough time.
Yeah, no, well, considering... I don't know if the deadline is actually really worth mentioning, seeing as this won't even be released.
The deadline has just passed, and all the Ruzalor should have gotten...
Yeah, your Ruzalor should have gotten in contact with me, and if they didn't... Well, not always me. Just the East Coast ones should get in contact with me. Get in contact with your responsible, respective local regional dudes. And if you are not able to get in touch with your regional commander, then forward it on to Phelan's Garada because it's going to him anyway eventually.
Also, point of origin needs to see as well.
Yes, also point.
I was just going to say forward it to Frost.
Do not forward it to me because I will send you back angry messages full of very profane image macros.
Okay, how about this? Let's test it and see how many times we can get people to do this. Every PM that you send on the Mercs for the next month, CC Frost on it.
Frost wrote a lot for words. Wow.
Yeah. I wonder how many messages you get. That would be an actually interesting thing. Just see how many we get.
It would also show how many people actually listen to this.
Yeah.
so at least one message.
So yeah, if you're listening to this podcast, just send Frost a message right now and let him know that you're listening.
Oh, great. Edit.
So, that's going live, baby. LWI is our new charity that we've been working on for a while. It's actually called Little Warrior International. It used to be called the Verdika Fund in the main club, but now we've actually spun it off into its own 501c3 charity organization. And basically what that means is that it's our own charity, and we can start having an indeterminate amount of money that we can start working with instead of having only a couple grand that we can give out every year.
So we can have unlimited money.
For a time before we give it out.
Yeah. So we aren't limited by that. And it's its own organization now, separate of the Mercs, but the Mercs works for it. It's a complicated relationship. I'm not going to go into it.
It's all legal.
Yeah, it's legal stuff. Just meant to protect our butts, basically. What we're going to be doing with it, we're going to be doing some initiatives. Something that we are going to be fighting for is fighting childhood hunger. So we're going to be helping out and reaching out to local communities that have hunger drives and food banks in your local area that will be wanting the Mercs to come out and do a charity fund for them or stand out and get pictures taken, that kind of thing, to help fight that cause. So we're gonna try to work on that. We'll be having more and more updates as it comes along. I'm working on a new website for them. We're getting the logos put together. So we'll get that up, and later this year, hopefully by around C6 or just after, that will be fully live, and we can start going full force with that. So that's the update. If you want to read a little bit more about it, you can check out the notes. It's in the news section under Little Warrior International Board Meeting.
Sounds quite exciting.
Yes.
Yeah.
Board meetings rock.
They do.
So that's all the time that we have for this month. We thank you for coming out. We did get the feedback from everybody that said they wanted a longer show, so we hope this satisfies this. This might come in actually like 2 hours. So that's kind of cool. Kind of cool for you guys, not cool for us because it's like 10 p.m., but hey, it's the sacrifices we make.
Hey, not for Asim. He's making the biggest sacrifice there on time.
Yeah, what time is it there, Asim?
It is 3 minutes to lunchtime, actually.
It's, oh, okay. It's almost, I thought it was early o'clock. In the morning.
Oh, okay. No. It was when we started, and then, 12 hours later.
Yes, it actually does take a full day out of our month to record these.
It does. That's why we don't do these weekly, guys. I don't have that in me.
Yeah. So we will...
Victorian-era coal mining children were up less hours of the day than we are, so it really doesn't matter.
Thank God we live in this time.
Yeah. Well, hey, the work conditions are better, too. I mean, back in the Victorian times, I mean, they had, like, gears moving on their podcast machines. So, I mean, you get your finger caught in that.
What, steampunk podcast?
Yep. Yeah. And you went to work and you liked it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was that in the medieval times, they just had to sit there and sort of pray and have god casts.
Yep.
Weekly Godcast. Anyway, we're going to skip past that topic right there. We will see everybody next week, next month.
We'll see everybody next month. Later.
So actually, next month it will be the month right before C6, so we have one more episode, and then we're going to have our special C6 episode where we're going to have all the podcast team members probably do a live show or a video show at C6. So look forward to that. I know, technology. It's like whoa.
Dude, we can't have this. We need to become like the Neopodludites.
You lost me.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think I added too many prefixes.
Can't just don't make a don't want that joke and be done.
No, I don't want that.
So we'll see everybody next month. Make sure you stick around the credits. Might find something fun.
Bye.
Adios.
Diddly 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 diddly.
This has been a production of the Mandalorian Mercs Costume Club. If you'd like to learn more about the topics discussed on today's show, please visit www.mandalorianmercs.com. The Mandalorian Mercs is a worldwide Star Wars costuming organization comprised of and operated by Star Wars fans. Star Wars, its characters, costumes, and all associated items are intellectual property of Lucasfilm. Copyright 2009 Lucasfilm Limited. We hope you enjoyed our show, and we'd love to hear your feedback. Please email podcast@mercs.firespray.net. Until next time, happy hunting.
Welcome to KTR! My co-host, Crow, has a mustache. Join Maria Ledenlaw with weather at 8:15, and Frost Kaman with sports at 8:25. This week, a little girl finds a stormtrooper in the bathroom.
What happens? Everything.
So creepy.
When you put it like that,
that's terribly creepy.
Yeah, that was
all right. That's it.